High noon in the District of Columbia. Right now, joining us on the BetQL guest line, our friend, Mr. Mitch Tischler. Mitchell, how do you do, buddy? How you feeling?
Mr. Tish Mitchell.
I'm doing well. I'm feeling all right. But I'll tell you what, hearing Backstreet Boys every Monday at noon really cheers up the week.
The draft didn't cheer your week up, man? What
the? The draft was fun. I think they did a great job. I was pretty happy with what the Commanders did there.
All right. Start at the top. You've been hot on Jaden Daniels probably longer than anybody. Maybe you or Denton Day, who loved him too locally. You thought that was the pick since like Thanksgiving, probably. How happy are you it finally landed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely happy. I think that he's a superstar, going to be a superstar, and I love his game so much. I mean, folks get so caught up with him, you know, running the football, but the fact that he uses his legs to get out of the pocket and still looking downfield, he runs more as a last resort than, you know, a first thought when he has to escape the pocket. And I love so much about him. I loved his demeanor, both on draft night, and we got to meet with him. He's an excited kid, and the smile that the million-dollar smile that he flashed when Adam Peters introduced him to the Commanders media belies any of the questions or thoughts about whether he wanted to play here or would be happy playing in D.C., whatever it may be. He's an NFL pro, and he's going to be the leader of this team from day one.
Is that the one thing that you heard throughout this little process that ended up being like kind of a bold-faced lie? That,
no,
he don't want to go to Washington?
You know, I said it a couple weeks ago, but, like, remember Caleb Williams wanted ownership of the team, and then Caleb didn't want to go to Chicago. And then all of a sudden, when it became obvious that he was going to be the number one pick to the Bears, the first consequential pick in the draft that started Thursday was with the Commanders. And so all of the shenanigans and ballyhoo and everything you heard about Caleb Williams kind of started to drift off to the side, and people started chiming in on Jaden Daniels. So it was the same situation, you know, that Caleb had to deal with, Jaden now had to deal with leading up to the draft. You know as well as anybody, when you've been, you know, working your butt off leading up to the draft and trying to get yourself in a position to play, you're so happy to be in the NFL.
Yeah.
And especially in a situation like Washington, where you're stepping in and you're going to be the starter from day one and be the guy that's going to lead this offense. There's no questions there.
Mm-hmm. Apparently there is a question, though, Mitch. I was touting you as the preeminent Jaden lover in town, you and Denton, and I got a text from Lamphill that says, realistically, Jeff and I were the first two guys on Team Jaden. Lamphill, explain yourself. When did you get on Team Jaden?
December.
But I said Mitch was Thanksgiving.
That doesn't count.
Why not?
December is more important.
Because of Christmas?
That is exactly right.
That? I don't know that you can say that. Jeff, when do you claim you were on Jaden?
I was on Jaden since he was in contention for the Heisman.
That's correct.
Right, which was about halfway through the college football season.
I will say
season.
In fairness, Jeff only cares about the SEC, and Jaden does play in the SEC.
If Jeff had said that, I would have believed him. But
I can pull up the audio, but I wasn't
sure.
All right, I'm going to go back and get it.
I know you will not.
By today.
I'm about to go back and get it.
I do think Jeff has a realistic claim to this because he's an SEC guy and does the SEC radio. And Lamphill, I think, has no claim to this. But, Mitch, would you like to defend yourself whether or not these are baseless claims? They're saying you were not first to Daniels. They were.
There's no defending needed. There's plenty of room on the Jaden bandwagon. I expect that lots of other people are going to jump on it along the way. Whether I was first or Jeff was first, I don't think Lamphill really was. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was about to say, Mitch.
You guys all hop on.
Yeah, Lamphill definitely stirred this up. Like you know it's all love for us, bro.
I'm just going to say I was first, but I agree the Jaden bandwagon is positive, and there's good vibes here. We let everybody on board.
I think
Lamphill just throwing himself on the bus.
when things really got cooking for Jaden, I think, because they were having a good season, but they were a little bit down, LSU, you know, I think even when they lost the opener. But the Florida game is what Jaden was asked about, sucking the soul out of a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, watch the tape from the Florida game. In that game, he completed 17 of 26 passes for 65%. What, Jeff?
With nothing, JP. You're just out of pocket.
Bro, that was the phrase Adam Peters said, Jeff. You're out of pocket. Yeah. That's the phrase the general manager and the head coach said.
Hey, stuff.
Adam Peters, you're out of pocket.
Off the bandwagon.
In that game against Florida, Daniels threw for 372 through the air on only 17 attempts. So you go ahead and do the math if the ball's going down the field. 372. I'm sorry, on 17 completions, only 26 attempts. Mm-hmm. 372, three touchdowns.
That's still good.
It's really good. And another 234 yards on the ground.
Damn.
Another two touchdowns. B, 234 on the ground on 12 attempts. I mean,
damn.
I think that's when the Heisman.
He almost averaged damn near 20 a carry.
Yeah, 19 and a half a carry.
Damn.
I mean, Mitch, you were on him. He's here. The rest is kind of in God's hands. We'll see what happens. Who was your favorite?
Jeff, you're out of pocket too, Jeff. You say you were on him before Mitch.
Pause.
Hey, yo, that was too late. You can't bring that claim up now.
But it worked.
I think he nailed it. Non-Jaden Daniels division, big man. What'd you think of the rest of the draft? Let's start with what matters most to you usually. How do you think they handled the left tackle pursuit?
I think they handled it. I think the process was good. The result might not have been great. How about that? I like the fact that they were trying to trade back into the first round for Tyler Guyton and for Jordan Morgan. But ultimately, there was a price they were willing to pay, and I like that they kind of stuck to their laurels and didn't overpay to move up to go get one of those guys. And when you start looking at the second round and kind of, you know, early in the third round, you didn't see a whole lot of tackles going because the league told you that the rest of the dudes that were there were closer to dudes than they were to starters. Now, to go out and get, you know, Brandon Coleman, you know, when they did, I think he's an interesting prospect. And I think that he has an opportunity to potentially grow into being a starting tackle in the league. I don't know that's something that's going to happen right away, but I think as a whole, you can look at kind of this Adam Peters draft, and one of the things that I liked was, you know, he got these athletic, you know, veteran guys, you know, who have shown kind of, you know, what they can be and who they are, and they're going to leave it up to the coaching staff to, you know, coach them up and get them in the right position. And so I think Brandon Coleman can turn into a starter. I don't expect that it's going to happen you know, right away. I don't think he'll be your opening day starter, but, you know, maybe by the middle of the season, he's starting to rotate in for some reps. But I do think they're going to be shopping on the vet free agent market, whether that's someone like Donovan Smith, who's still out there from Tampa last year, or they end up waiting to see what players get cut as cap casualties. I think, you know, they're going to need to add something in the tackle room, because at the moment, you know, really the only playable guys that you have there are going to be Andrew Wiley and Cornelius Lucas. And, you know, obviously folks want to argue about how playable those two are. So it's going to be interesting to see how they address it as they move forward. But at the end of the day, this is a roster that had a lot of holes in it, and they had to fill a lot of holes in free agency and in the draft. And at the end of the day, you can't fill every single one in one offseason. So left tackle might be, you know, a stopgap this year go get your guy next year.
I think they think it can become Coleman, though. I'm with you in that maybe it's not Coleman to open the season, but I wouldn't say that Coleman can't be that guy.
I just don't think they finish. I think when they have all these when they release people in June, I think there's someone that could possibly be there. But I think ultimately what they want a young guy to take that position.
Yeah, of course. If you can have a quarterback and your, you know, stud tackle, whether he's your left or right guy, both on a rookie deal, that gives you a lot of freedom to fill out other positions. And, you know, when you talk about tackle, we have to talk about both sides tackles, because Andrew Wiley might be a placeholder again this year, but that's a place that you need to upgrade as well. And I don't think you're going to be able to upgrade both of them in one season. So I don't think they're done this year. And I think that they're going to spend a high draft pick next year probably on that position.
I think at least right now they believe Coleman could be the answer. There's a strong belief in that building in Brandon Coleman.
Yeah.
So I would not – like if you're asking me today what I expect to have to target left tackle first round next year, I don't know that I agree. We'll see. Obviously, a lot can change between now and then.
I mean, JP, his athleticism, you know, you can talk about the RAS score and all that stuff. Like, his athleticism is off the charts. And, you know, he has all the physical tools that you would look for in a starting left tackle. And so it's a question. It's going to be a question about his development, which obviously sort of boils down to how does Bobby Johnson work with him? And there were mixed results, right? And last year, things weren't great with him up in New York. A couple mm-hmm. seasons ago, things were pretty good in Buffalo when he was up there. So I think that a lot's going to come down to how Bobby's able to work with him and help him develop and get to the point where he can be, you know, relied on as a starting guy.
I'm with you there. You were all over Sanistril. We did the mock draft for the Beltway Football TV show, and you actually nailed that pick, which is pretty impressive. The two most impressive things to me in the draft process were, I'll go three. Mitch nailed Sanistril to Washington. Mm-hmm. Our guy Marcus Washington that joined us last week from WJA nailed Ben Sennett. And sitting in the draft room Friday night, right before the Johnny Newton pick, Standing, who was sitting right in front of Mitch and I, was like, man, watch for Johnny Newton here. And then sure enough, they called his name. So mm-hmm. I will always point out guys that get something right in the draft because it is such a exponential crapshoot that, like, getting something right is pretty difficult. What do you like so much about Sanistril?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he was a captain and key cog of a national championship-winning defense, and you've seen folks say that he was the heart and soul of that defense. He just strikes me as the type of player that, you know, Dan Quinn and Joe Witt would love because he's both aggressive on the field and plays with a ton of great instincts. He's really good at getting after the ball, but also getting after the quarterback on those, you know, kind of corner blitzes, yeah. Slot blitzes, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, the fact that he made big plays and big games in the national championship game, an 81-yard interception, you know, kind of broke the back of Michael Penix in Washington with that play. He seems exactly like the type of guy that these guys want to bring into this locker room. And I think he's going to be able to step right in and, you know, start right away and be an impact player.
I think he plays big, too. He doesn't play his size. I mean, I think we got size might matter in certain positions, but as a cornerback, he could be a gnat.
It's the motion of the ocean.
Especially as a slot corner, you can yeah. be a little bit smaller. But I think Adam Peters, after day two of the draft, was talking about Sanistril and when they went to the Michigan Pro Day, and how they started off and he did all the defensive drills, and then moved over and he was included in the offensive drills, and he just said he was like the Energizer Bunny. He just had all this energy in the world, and may have been one of the better guys that was running routes there, and he was the slot corner. He started off in college as a wide receiver, moved over to corner. And I love the fact that the guy has an understanding of what receivers are going to be trying to do to him, especially, you know, first-person knowledge. And then also the fact that he clearly has some pretty good hands if he was a wide receiver. So, you know, we wanted ball hawks, and everyone was very excited about Emmanuel Forbes last year, hoping he was going to be that guy. I think these guys will have a better chance in this Joe Witt defense to go and make plays and be the ball hawk. Instead of talking about it, they'll be about it. And I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the field.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like there. Did anybody day three stand out to you? You got Temple linebacker, Washington safety, Notre Dame D-end-ish,
John Baptiste. I mean, I kind of like the Jordan McGee signing or pick a fair amount. He's a little bit of an undersized middle linebacker, but in this day and age in the NFL, I don't know that you necessarily need to be prototypical size, you know, early 2000s, you know, late 90s, kind of London Fletcher type, you know, linebacker type guy. And I think that the speed and the athleticism that he's going to be able to bring to the inside of that room, especially with a chance to learn from Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu, I think will speak volumes for him. Plus, he's a special teams standout. And when you get to day three, those guys have to be able to play special teams to make a roster. And having that time, you know, working with Bobby Wagner can only elevate him and help him out. And I think he'll be, you know, an interesting piece as they move forward. They didn't pick up the fifth-year option on Jamin Davis. Maybe he's able to kind of take over Jamin's role next year when Jamin presumably ends up elsewhere. And hopefully he's the start of this regime valuing linebacker, building up linebacker, and getting guys who can get out there and play that position.
I mean, I think you've already seen this regime caring more about the linebacker position just in free agency between Wagner and Louvu, and Louvu actually getting real money and multi-year deal. But, yeah, McGee has an opportunity. It's going to be fascinating to watch what happens with Jamin Davis. He was at the draft party. I didn't get to talk to him, but I know reporters did and asked about the fifth-year option, and he answered it as best you can. You know, hey, it's a business. We'll see what happens. I do think, though, and it's probably a little premature, I'm tempted to, like, do a projected roster. I think there's going to be some draft picks from the previous administration that don't make the final 53.
That's very possible.
You know what I mean? Like, when you're running a team and you draft a guy in the fourth, fifth, second, first, whatever round, you give them a longer leash. But when somebody new comes in, they've watched the tape. They don't care what the prior draft position was because it doesn't impact their ledger of draft wins and losses.
Totally.
Something to watch, certainly, as we get into August. Big man, I'd be remiss if I don't let you at least the Caps, encouraging end of the season, an encouraging end of the regular season to fight their way into the playoffs. Pretty one-sided affair once they got into the playoffs against the Rangers, who are a great team. What's the future look like for the Washington Capitals right now?
I got to be honest. I think they showed a ton of heart and a ton of fight just to get into the playoffs, and I hope fans appreciate that because this team could have easily rolled over with 10 days left in the season and said, hey, I'm ready to go golfing. And they didn't, and they fought to the end, and I think you're starting to see the changeover to the younger guys starting to play bigger roles. You know, you got to love the fact that the Hershey Bears team, you know, has experience winning the Calder Cup. I think they're back in the playoffs again this year. You have guys who have a championship pedigree starting to work their way up into the NHL level. And I think you're starting to see kind of the start to the move, you know, to the post. Ovi's going to be is a juggernaut on that roster and on that team. Honestly, in the NHL and in the sports world, based on the record that he's going after and, you know, take a big season next year to do it, but hopefully he can break the record next year. But you're starting to see kind of the big picture plan for this team. And with all these young guys coming up and playing important minutes and getting that, you know, kind of playoff experience this year will speak volumes and help them as they start moving forward. And you can't talk about this Caps team without loving what Charlie Lindgren turned into, you know, a journeyman kind of backup goalie stepping in and just nabbing that role and playing as well as he did in the second half of the year. And honestly, you look at some of those playoff games and he was the reason that this team was, you know, close in some of those games, because otherwise it could have gotten ugly. So it's a shame they ran into the juggernaut that the Rangers are, but I think there's some excitement for Caps fans as you start looking at what this team's going to look like in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
Well said there. We'll see what happens with them. I just wonder if the goaltending can stay that high. I don't know. I like that they did everything right. They sold at the deadline. They've got some space. They've got draft picks. Like they recognize that it's time to rebuild in a different fashion. And then they just got hot late and still made the playoffs. So all in all, I think it was pretty fun. I'm going to let you go, dude. Rest up.
All right, Mitch. Be cool,
Mitch,
brother.
Mitch's playing hurt. He's sick, B.
All right, guys. Appreciate you.
See you, buddy.
Hey, Chippy, I held it together for you guys. I gave my voice all it had left.
Everything he's got. Mm-hmm. All right, buddy. Take care. Feel better. I think there's one question that looms largest for the Commanders now that largely, you know, you get through free agency and then the draft. I mean, that's about 95% of your offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could they still add people? Could there be crazy trades? Sure. But most of the work is done. What are the biggest questions now for the organization? We'll examine when we return. It's
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Mitchell Finley. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Here's a question. The offseason is pretty much done now. Like, they added, what, 16 new players via free agency? They just draft 9 new rookies, signed another handful. That's significant roster overhaul. Yeah. Significant. And so now what is the biggest question for the Commanders? Got this from our guy Eddie D via the YouTube stream. He says, the biggest question is how are they going to run their offense? The defense seems easier to run with the roster they've built, but an offense with Daniels needs to be creative and aggressive. I would think it's going to be.
It's very much what Kingsbury already been running.
Right.
But they're going to tailor it to him. I don't think Kingsbury is going to come and have a brand new offense. What you saw Kyler Murray running is about what he's going to be running here. With a little different little changes here and there. Jaden Daniels, I think what people forget is we've said this multiple times, he's not just a runner. He's a passer who can run. And when things break down is when he normally runs. He doesn't just bail out of a pocket just be bailing out of a pocket. So I don't think Kingsbury has to do much difference. It's just making sure it's tailored and he hones in everything. And be just fine.
What do you think the biggest question is kind of at this stage of the game?
Just like you said earlier about we don't know how they're going to play. Now I've had faith in this coaching staff based off of their history on other teams and what they've done, that they're going to be able to get the best out of these players. Now, the developing of the talent. They picked talented people. They pick guys that are very, very versatile, athletic. Now, can they get all that stuff leading to building a team? You know, the ultimate thing is we drafted all individuals. Now we got to build a team. And I happen to believe that we have the right staff to get it done, but it does take some work.
For sure. Definitely takes some work. I think the left tackle position clearly is somewhere between worrisome and at least noteworthy. But I
think that left tackle is a problem until you have the proper person. So
because of its importance?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to pick a guy today and then all of a sudden that problem is solved tomorrow. That's a work in progress.
I agree with that. I think the left tackle is probably the most pressing issue. But I've been pretty clear about this. I'm not expecting them to be that good. I think they could improve a lot and the record not jump a lot. Like, maybe they go 6-11, but they're way more competitive. Remember how bad.
I just have a feeling
they had the worst point differential in the NFL last year.
Yeah. And I think there was no guidance and nothing going on with that team last year. So I just think that having guidance, having people on the same page is going to make a difference.
Yeah. It was a disaster.
Think back to a lot of the comments that players were making last year. And then I see those same players this year. They're different people. they just don't see like, listen, man, it wasn't good what was going on, bro.
They finished with a minus 189 point differential.
That's worse
than the Panthers, significantly worse than the Patriots. Like, it was bad. So I think we got to be cognizant of that. But a concern of mine, we were kind of running through this with both the McGee selection in the 5th and then the Jean Baptiste selection in the 7th. Where's the pass rush going to come from? Dorrance Armstrong in the last 2 years has gone for at least 7.5 sacks. I think he went 8.5 and then 7.5. And that's in limited work. So I think Armstrong gives you some pass rush immediately. Mm-hmm. I think Luvu can help you with pass rush a lot. But Farrell and Fowler are kind of just going to be rotational pieces. Maybe Henry or Andre Jones. I mean, Henry showed some real flashes in game. Jones had a really good training camp. I don't know what to expect from Jean-Baptiste. You can also get plenty of pressure and disruption from Allen, Payne, and now I would add Newton.
Just remember, Payne had double-digit sacks.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. John Allen has had close to 10, 9.5, wasn't it?
I'd have to pull it. I don't think he's ever had double digits. But
so I said 9.5. So yeah. Those guys right there, they can also help with the sacks.
Well, and I also think the scheme will move stuff around. I think that could be a huge part of it.
The scheme being one in which we're going to cater to what we have as talent on our team instead of just saying, do what I say do, that may help out too.
I do worry about generating the pressures. I think that's a real question because that helps you get off the field. Jeffrey, what would you say? We kind of know what they've got now. What remains the biggest question for you?
Well, the biggest question for me is not even a roster move. My thing is, can they put it all together? We've said we've upgraded at certain spots. We've made the necessary moves. Can we put it all together to have a better season, better record than we had last year and the year before that? Can we do that in the first year?
I go on a limb and say yes.
A lot of people say we probably going to suck. I don't get where they're getting that from for the first year. I don't get where, you know, people just think just because a new coach come in, they're automatically going to have a bad season. I think we will actually have a decent season this year, and I think it's going to come.
What is the difference between bad and decent?
Bad is
last year was bad.
Yeah, last year was bad. We were second overall pick. We
and that need was at least a coach in his fourth season.
Yeah, and I honestly think decent would at least be 9 games as your first
winning 9.
Yes, you got to at least win 9 this season, and double digit will be good. At least
double digit would be great.
That's a high bar, Jeffrey. You got him with
Jeff is a tougher teacher than me, man.
You got him going over 500 this year with a rookie quarterback, no established left tackle, and
I think the left tackle thing is vitally important, but I think we overstated. You can help that out tremendously with the way that you scheme up stuff.
I agree.
Offensively.
Titus Jones via Twitter said they've got to add another veteran wide receiver. Who's your third wideout today? Hell, who's your second? Jahan?
Second is Jahan still. I think the third is Jahan said that he went to another team already. When he shows up, they say, man, felt like I got traded.
Who's your third?
It was bad last year, brother. Your third is probably Diami.
Yeah.
I'm saying. I mean, then again, I'm waiting for this offense to get together and see how they work it out. Because I just think that, listen, man, last year offensively, defensively, we did not utilize some people properly. And some people also individual players.
Odell Beckham's still a free agent.
A player's got a little fed up and didn't produce. These players got to understand when things aren't going right the way you think it should sometimes, you got to still ball out.
I think having different leadership will change a lot. I'm not necessarily expecting any of this, but there are some like veteran free agent wide receivers still out there. It is interesting. Like I wonder what kind of opportunity Luke McCaffrey has to get on the field, you know, try to accomplish something. It's not zero. Like it's not zero. Landini, what would your biggest question be now?
For me, the biggest question is will the defense be able to stop people? We saw that last year. They just weren't. And I think that was a contributing factor to maybe why Sam Howell struggled at time. You know, the offense was very pass happy. And one of the reasons for that was that they were losing all the time because the defense sucked and kept getting scored on. I think if they can actually stop some people this year, that can only be good for Jaden.
And we actually thought the defense was going to be very good last year.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And some of the offensive questions, like what if Ertz can deliver? What if Eckler can deliver? You know, could that maybe take the pressure off of a third wideout? I can't help but think about a guy like DJ Chark is still a free agent. I mean, that's a guy that's had 1,000-yard seasons, and he's big. He's 6'3". Like, he would give them something they don't have.
I just think that this is not like a sprint. We talk as if they have to solve every problem this year. You may have to go into it with a little Band-Aid on certain things and hopefully correct it next year or in June, the June releases. Does somebody get released that can truly help you out? But we don't have to get everything done prior to this year. This is not a one-year fix, especially if you wanted to go for the long haul. This is probably a 2-3-year fix. Hopefully two at the most.
Yo, Jeff and Landfill, cut that audio of Mr. Mitchell taking the very patient approach. God forbid we get to late November and there's...
But no, I mean, it's a brand new regime that seems to be working properly. But I'm just saying, I don't have the mindset that we got to solve everything in 1 year. You know, like, when you went to that draft and you were able to get these certain players in certain positions, you may miss out on one. But then you have to be smart enough to make sure your scheme and the way you do things helps out the weakest link.
Yeah.
Per se. So we'll see.
I think there's a lot to like. I think they're building for 2025. And I think
Greg said we're going to the Super Bowl.
Of course he did.
Just like him spelling, huh?
You know where we're going? Break. We'll be right back. It's funny you're playing this. I follow Robert Little on Twitter, Black Sports Online.
Mm-hmm.
He is an elite, like, headline writer. And this caught my eye. Remember Sebastian Telfair?
Yeah.
Point guard? Called him Bassy. Apparently, Sebastian Telfair just got a 3.5-year gun sentence because his wife, his mistress, and his girlfriend all testified against him.
Damn.
That's a lot.
Well, that's a triple threat right there. All three of them going at you? Dog, you should have known you were going to jail.
And then look at the picture. Bassy definitely has a type. They all kind of look alike.
Yeah. Ooh, that one in the middle look a little
The one in the middle. Rough. The one on the edges look.
Who's the one on the?
I don't know.
Girlfriend or the mistress?
I'm not clicking on the story. I don't know. That's all I know. But like,
all I know, that face right there looked like you were in trouble when you met her.
He has zero ride or die chicks. If all three of them are testifying against him, he really needs to like reconsider his techniques. I would say a technique you do not need to reconsider. Caller number 10 right now. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. You'll win two tickets to the Marley Brothers. Ziggy, Steven, Julian, Kamani, Damian, the Legacy Tour.
Uh-oh.
That'll be a lot of fun. Friday, September 27th at Jiffy Lube Live. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more,
oh, he's gonna be in the air that night.
Yeah, what do you think it's gonna smell like out there?
Oh man, I'll be in my, I'm gonna sit on my back.
I can like smell Jeff Walker
my,
be there.
I'll be able to smell that from my back deck.
Just like Jeff's, like every T-shirt Jeff wears to work. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Live Nation. Call number 10 right now. Marley Brothers in concert in late September. now I can't help but think about Sebastian Telfair's love life and what Jeff's clothes smell like. Did you get to watch any of the Caps last night? We'll give our Caps wrap up real quick.
No.
They were outmanned. I mean,
I was traveling, JP.
Where all were you yesterday? Where were you? Since I saw you were in Detroit Saturday morning. I then saw you at National Harbor Saturday afternoon.
From there to Herndon. From Herndon back to Alexandria to Brown Academy. Then back home. Then from there to a car show at the Porsche dealership in Chantilly.
When did you finally get to sleep Saturday night? You had to be exhausted.
Like 12 something. I don't remember. I just remember laying down and waking up.
Yeah.
Well, no, all I remember was putting my watch on the stand to charge. And the next thing you know, I was waking up in the morning. And then I ventured from Chantilly to Leonardtown, Maryland. Had a great time down there.
What is that drive, Chantilly to Leonardtown?
83 miles.
Damn! Really?
Yeah.
What, do you go around the Wilson Bridge to, like, Route 2 or something?
Nah, you get on 5, take 5
Route
all
5.
The way out.
Okay.
And when you get into Waldorf, you take that left where 301 and 5 split. You make the left, continue on, get to Leonardtown Road, and you just keep riding, brother.
I would not have guessed that was 83 miles from your house.
Oh, yes.
All right, how far is it from right here at the radio station?
I'll say about 55.
Damn. I mean, from here, it says just the fastest route, because you don't want to cut through the city, would be the Beltway south around the Wilson Bridge, and it's 80 miles.
Damn.
That was far, man.
I miscalculated that.
Well, no, because from your house, like, the mileage sounds about right. It's just that the miles are a little screwed up from here. All right, here's what I want to do. Barry Svrluga is going to join us next. I saw Barry last night at the Caps game. Obviously, Barry has been locked into the Commanders draft as well. A couple interesting, like, little audio clips have emerged. Schefter was just on McAfee.
Mm-hmm.
And said definitively, and he kind of, there were hints of this going back to last Thursday, that Drake May was never really under consideration for Washington. That their draft board was Daniels 1 and J.J. McCarthy 2.
I know, they said that. They said that that night.
And I had kind of been hearing hints of that going up until the final week, and I could kind of understand it. I know that there's people that swear by Drake. I think for young quarterbacks, B, the situation you land in is of the utmost importance.
Mm-hmm.
Have you taken a look at what New England's got?
Not much.
Not much, man.
Gresh and Fourier.
Yeah,
they do radio up in.
That's who we did our cross talk with.
In New England.
That was a wild
and
segment.
And Gresh was totally not happy with the Drake May pick.
Really?
Fourier was like, okay, he'll grow into it. They wanted another position totally.
I think a lot of people up there were kind of saying, trade back, get as many picks as you can. Now, if you think you got the right quarterback, there's not enough picks in the world that are worth more than the right quarterback. But Drake May's going to a team. One, I think Jacoby Brissett starts. But, I mean, that line needs work. I mean, their best wideout is maybe Jalen Polk that they drafted in the second round. You talk about Ramondre Stevenson. They did sign Antonio Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think New England has the lowest win total in the NFL. That's a rough situation to be walking into up there.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Svrluga joins the program next.